Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 2 of NML Crossing, where, I hate to start every episode with an apology, but if you made it through that first episode, well, thank you, of course, but also, I'm sorry. That was a very, very tough episode for me to record. First thing I've recorded in 6 months. I haven't bellied up to the microphone in a very long time. And I'm afraid that that might have shown in the performance I gave last episode. So if you made it through, thank you. And again, I'm sorry. Hopefully I can knock off some more of the mic rust as we work our way through here. And hopefully it's, the only way we can go is up, right? I'll tell you, though, it's a very odd sensation to be back in a room talking to myself. It's, in a lot of ways, it's like I never left, and in a lot of ways, it's like I've never done it before. So, it's an interesting way to start this new year. Now, today, the book we're going to discuss actually kicks off the Cataclysm storyline, which leads to the road to No Man's Land, and into and through No Man's Land, of course. And it's coming from a book that I associate with the early 90s, and we'll talk about this more as we go through, but like when I was looking at my notes, when I was putting together, the little No Man's Land triptych, the NML Crossing map, if you will, I was shocked to see how many issues of Shadow of the Bat were involved in it. Because it's 1998. That's still a thing? Shadow of the Bat? I don't know. I associate that so strongly with the early 90s and the like seminal months and years of my comics fandom that to see it closer to the turn of the century is so weird. Just so weird. Just doesn't look like it fits. But with that said, how about we hop in? We'll stop the vamping and get into the coverage of Batman Shadow of the Bat number 73, which had an April 1998 cover date. The story is called Cataclysm Part 1, Castles Built on Sand, written by Alan Grant, with pencils by Mark Buckingham, inks Wayne Foucher, colors Pam Rambo and Android Images, letters Bill Oakley, edits Jordan B. Gorfinkel, and Dennis O'Neill. I don't think I've ever called him Dennis O'Neill. He's always credited as Dennis, but he's always Denny. I don't know. Cover price, $1.95. Now, we open with a shot of some Gotham high-rises and with some sort of kind of purple prose to describe it and the movable plates of Earth below. That night, Bruce Wayne heads down Grandfather Clock Way to the Batcave, bidding Alfred a good evening as he gets to the business of batting. Now, in the cave, he dials up Oracle to discuss a criminal named Billy Wildman, who, according to the DC Wikia, makes his first and final appearance in this issue. So, I'm guessing he's not like a dangler from the pre-No Man's Land era. Anyway, while Babs is reporting on Wildman and his crew, the bat seismic sensors begin to go nuts. Perhaps it's worth noting it is 7:03 p.m. It probably is worth noting because we're going to be revisiting 7:03 a fair amount early on. Now, before we know it, the entire cave is shaking. All of the bat computers are drawn back into like these Kevlar canopies, like they retract to protect them from any falling damage or, I guess, falling over themselves. Those famous bat souvenirs, however, aren't quite so protected. So, like that big T-Rex, the giant penny, and the Joker card, they're just flipping and flopping all over the place. Oracle loses contact with Batman. All lines of communication to the cave are down. Just then, the clock tower starts shaking. Of course, the clock tower is where Oracle operates. Barbara is knocked over, out of her wheelchair, and she cracks her head on the corner of a nearby desk. Meanwhile, Alfred is taking care of some evening chores while singing a lick of Al Jolson's The Anniversary Song. Wayne Manor starts shaking, the floor opens up, and Alfred falls into the abyss below. In fact, Wayne Manor altogether implodes on itself. The entirety of the place plummets into the cave. Speaking of the cave, the place is still shaking, and pretty much every way out has been rendered inaccessible. Batman frantically attempts to flee, but, he can't. There's nowhere to go. He winds up falling into a rerouted underground stream and finds himself KO'd by a rock. And so he drifts down current, completely unconscious. From here we hop into very recent flashback land, 3 minutes before the quake. We're at the Gotham Midtown Mall with Harvey Bullock, who's buying some double Corona cigars. Now, out of the corner of his eye, he notices Billy Wildman, and he heads over to, well, question him at gunpoint. On a nearby rooftop, Anarchy is also watching Billy Wildman. Anarchy is another name that I don't associate with this era. He seems like an early 90s kind of guy. Anyway, as Anarchy leaps toward the baddies, the quake hits. Now, the entire Midtown area is almost instantly destroyed. It's really like a hell of an image to take in. It's very, very well done. Though, again, there is a lot of like purpley captions to describe it, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Anyway, Anarchy nearly falls to his doom during the quake, but manages to tuck and roll, which I'd assume is no small feat in that weird robey costume that he wears. Now, he and Bullock both retreat, taking cover in some, like, playground tube thingy. Like, they both enter the tube on either end, and they meet in the middle, where Harvey immediately tells the kid that he's under arrest. Anarchy, he was never a favorite of mine, so I couldn't tell you exactly what he did, though Bullock does tell us that Anarchy is an escaped criminal. Anyway, while in the tube, the quake stops. As they exit, however, Bullock realizes that there's a gas leak overhead, as well as some highly inconvenient sparking wires, and so, boom, a giant explosion. Harvey pushes Anarchy out of the way of the blast before arresting him again. Now, it's here that Anarchy points out that, you know, something big just happened, and, well, there are some people calling for help nearby. The people need help, so what are we going to do here, right? Are you going to shoot me? Are you going to arrest me? Or are we going to help people? And Bullock kind of stands down. Anarchy runs off, and Bullock follows. We don't know if he's following to help or to arrest. Well, I guess maybe we'll find out later. Now, back at the clock tower, Barbara comes too. Thankfully, and somewhat conveniently, all Wayne properties, except Wayne Manor itself, have been fortified against earthquakes, which is something that Bruce insisted on, even though he was mocked for it by board members. As Barbara wonders where Batman and her father currently are, we also learn that all Wayne-owned buildings are fully wheelchair accessible. She heads outside and takes in the damage, and, I mean, the city is basically done. She sees a man frantically digging through the wreckage, attempting to pull his wife from their car, though from our vantage point, we can see that it's too late to save her, and that she never actually had a chance. From here, Barbara heads over to Police HQ, which is, like, just barely and partially standing, which makes her wonder a little bit more about the whereabouts and safety of her father. She also spots an officer sitting in the rubble crying, and well, she goes over and's like, "Hey, dude, snap out of it. You know, whatever you're going through, get over it. We got people to help." From here, we jump back to Wayne Manor, or I guess the place that used to be Wayne Manor, because it is an absolute disaster. And among the debris, we can see Alfred laying under some slag, some beams, stuff like that. And we close out the issue down below, where Batman hangs unconscious from a stalagmite jutting out from where that underground stream turns into an underground waterfall. And that is where we leave it. Next time out, we're going to be talking about Nightwing number 19. That was a hell of an issue. How about we talk about it a little bit? You know, what immediately strikes me is just how quickly everything happened. I mean, we did have a prologue in Detective, you know, brief warning that there was a quake coming. It kind of came out of nowhere, right? It felt very much out of nowhere, kind of the way I suppose an actual earthquake could be, right? Now, as mentioned, I'd only ever read this story via the very, very abridged five-volume trade collection, which kicked off with the first arc of No Man's Land, which I want to say was No Law and a New Order. I think that was the first arc. It didn't start with Cataclysm. It didn't start with The Road 2. It didn't start with the Aftershock. It started, everything was already down and destroyed. So this is the first time I'm actually seeing the quake happen. And that said, I definitely appreciated how, for lack of a better term, and for lack of any sort of real-world experience I might have, it felt genuine, it felt real, right? Like, we knew it was coming, and they really could have, and perhaps if this was written 5 or 10 years later, they would have milked the suspense of it right? It's like there's something coming.
Like we'd have like a year's worth of banners on top of every issue saying like 11 months till the quake, 10 months till the quake, you know, stuff like that. We don't get that here, which is great, you know? We get a couple of pages and then boom, you know, the sucker strikes. We get to see a few locales where things went down, which it leaves us with a lot of questions regarding the places and the characters around Gotham that we don't get a good look at. And I mean, we're only a chapter in, and what was it that Denny said last issue in his essay? The Cataclysm story is going to be something like 500 pages long. And at this point, we're like 20-something in, right? So I suppose, so far so good is as best as I can put it for now. How about we talk about the art? I don't usually talk about art. If you followed any of my, you know, writing and talking exploits, you'll know that I don't feel comfortable judging art, because, like, who the hell am I to say anything about art, or actually much of anything? Well, I do want to discuss it today, because it's really, really, really good. Buckingham, and Foucher absolutely kill it. I mean, parts of Gotham are reduced to rubble, ash, and scrap, and the art's able to convey that to perfection. You know, before starting to pay attention to this era of the Bat books, I didn't know Buckingham ever worked on them. I think I discovered his work probably during the Paul Jenkins run on Peter Parker. I mean, I was a Marvel guy for most of my life. That Peter Parker run was really, really fun, and Buckingham killed it over there as well. I'm also familiar with him from his time on Titans, which was another really, really good-looking book. Now, across the table, we've got Alan Grant, who is a great writer. Though, if you were paying attention, I did mention that the prose did trend a little bit purple, which, again, nothing wrong with that. But, to be honest, it kind of pulled me out of the story a little bit. You know, I don't want to project, but it felt a little too impressed with itself and how it described the disaster and destruction of Gotham. I'm kind of two minds on it. I mean, because for such a monumental scene for the time, I suppose some fancy, almost lyrical prose might be appropriate. But it didn't quite land for me personally, is all. It got the point across, it conveyed the magnitude of, you know, the situation. So I'm just talking out my ass at this point. Now let's wrap up with a brief discussion on the title itself. Shadow of the Bat. I mentioned this earlier on. I can hardly believe that this was still a thing at this point. It's not going to survive No Man's Land. You know, the last chapter of this mega event actually happens in the final issue of this series. But like I said, when I was doing my research and I saw that like something like 20 issues of Shadow of the Bat part of this run, I was completely taken aback and, to be honest, quite annoyed that I was going to have to dig through bins to buy issues of Shadow of the Bat. My No Man's Land era Bat book run, I probably had 2/3 of the books in individual issues. I had the trades, of course, which were not near as complete as I would have liked them to be. But I don't have many Shadow of the Bats from this era. I didn't know it was still a thing. So in the interim between when I decided to do this project and now, I have collected most of the Shadow of the Bats that I've needed. I've collected most of everything that I've needed. There are a couple of books that are still eluding my grasp. A couple of the spendier ones. Not the spendy one, because we're not getting the... I'm not getting the original first printing of the Harley Quinn one-shot, because I'm not spending that kind of money on that. I'm going to be using a reprint for that. But we do have some moderately spendy books. We have the second, third, fourth, and fifth appearances of Harley. We got Cassandra Cain's first appearance. We got a few that we got to track down. But I'm not worried about that at all. Those will show up when they show up, and I'm sure I'll get my grubby hands on them in time to cover them for whenever they come up in the rotation. To be honest, the title that I was most nervous about trying to collect was, I think there are 7 issues of Catwoman that tie into Cataclysm and later on into No Man's Land, and Catwoman doesn't show up in the bins too often. I don't know if it was never a hot seller back in the 90s, or short printed or whatever, but I thought those were going to be difficult to find, and then I found them like in an afternoon, and they were cheap. I think they were like $2 each, so that was quite a relief. Anyway, back to Shadow of the Bat. You know, this book started off so hot back in, was it 92 or so? It was around Batman Returns, I think. I mean, at least in the circles I ran, and it was a pretty hot book. It came with that poly bag, it had the painted cover, it was just a really, really good-looking book. And once that first arc, the last Arkham, ended, it kind of fell off our radars entirely. I think I personally bought like an issue or two following the last Arkham. I think it was a story about like a character called the Black Spider, which it didn't have like the gravitas, for lack of a better term, that the last Arkham did. And I quickly fell off of it. And like I said, to see that this book was still coming out all those years later was quite a shock. And, you know, it was actually in reading that opening arc of Shadow of the Bat that I came to realize how much trouble my, like, silly, addled mind was going to have in dealing with characters who starred in several books a month. You see, there was a very, very good cliffhanger. I think it was Shadow of the Bat number 3. And in the last Arkham, Batman's committed to Arkham Asylum, and it's a good story. But the cliffhanger at the end of 3 had Batman cornered in Arkham by, like, the entire rogues gallery. Like, there's no way out. And I just couldn't wait for the next issue to hit. And we went to the comic store, like, 3 or 4 times a week, even if we didn't buy anything. We just went there because it's what we did. At the comic shop, I think, like, a week or two later, I saw that he was having completely different adventures in Batman and in Detective Comics, which, I mean, I was a dumb kid. I still am a dumb kid, but the illusion for me just shattered, and I realized that that huge cliffhanger that I had built up in my head and I couldn't wait to see play out, there really weren't any stakes there. It was just another story in the month. So maybe that's what made Shadow of the Bat fall off my radar. Who knows? Anyway, I will end today's audio missive here and let you all get on with the rest of your day. This was a really, really good issue, a great opening blast for Cataclysm, and it's making me very, very excited to work our way through the rest of this story and beyond into No Man's Land. I hope you're enjoying this. Like I said at the end of the last episode, I believe this entire story is available on Hoopla. If you want to follow along, it's free. I think you just got to sign up for a library card, and you can read through the whole thing with me. It's on the DC version of Marvel Unlimited, whatever that's called too. So if you want to check it out, it's there, and I hope you do, because it's some really, really good stuff. Anyway, with all that said, I want to thank you all so much for choosing to share some of your time with me today. And until next time, hopefully I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya.
Makes it harder to think straight, starting over after it breaks, starting over when the story's got an astounding twist. You better turn that page. When push it comes to shove, we do not fall out of love.